Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
Linux Luddites is a show where we try out all the latest free and open source software and then decide we like the old stuff better.
More than just news and releases, we check out a wide range of Linux distros, cover your feedback, talk about obscure command line programs, discuss burning issues over a pint, and much, much more. So join me, Paddy,
and me, Joe, every 2 weeks for news, reviews, comment, and generally being grumpy at linuxluddites.com.
Linux Luddites, because not all change is progress.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 120 of Linux in the Ham Shack. Yes, 120. Not binary, vaguely decimal, certainly not base 12, just a number, 120. And we have a cool show tonight because it just so happens that a friend of the show decided to pull another rabbit out of his hat in the accessible computing world, so we'll get to him in just a moment, but before we do that, we will welcome the co-host with the most from Montreal, Canada, Pete, VE2XPL. How's it going, Pete?
Good evening, everyone. Yeah, it's going cold. I was talking about that in the pre-show. 15 degrees right now. 15 Celsius, 5 degrees Fahrenheit. It's been freezing here. But on the plus side, we've had some nice powdery snow, and we're ready for Christmas. So, it's all very pristine out there. It's still snowing now, which flabbergasts me because it normally never snows when it's that cold. But apparently sometimes it does. So, happy to be here. Thanks for having me once again. 120, that's exciting. It's an even number, so I'm always excited when we hit it's like a new decade, you know?
Well, 122 is technically an even number as well, so.
Right.
All right. Well, very good. All of our snow is gone, but let's check in and see how much snow there is out in Massachusetts tonight and check in with Jonathan. Come on, you do his name much better than I do, Pete.
C'est Jonathan Nadeau qui est notre invité spécial, our special guest. Take it away, Jonathan.
Bonjour.
Excellent.
We've exhausted his knowledge of French.
Exactly.
Well, he's got a few other words in there. I heard him before.
But there's snow on the ground here. It was snowing all day today. As far as how many inches, enough to be annoying. So I'm not a fan of snow at all. So kind of living in the wrong place if you don't like snow.
But where are you, by the way?
I'm in Massachusetts. I live like an hour outside of Boston.
Okay. Oh, nice. That's nice country there.
That's my part of the country. That's where I'm from. So, well, not specifically where he's from. I'm from New Hampshire, but close enough.
Yeah, we can talk about Russ's favorite lake.
Oh, yeah.
The Chogagog, Magog, Jagog, Bogog.
That was close. I've said it many times in my career, and I think the last time you were on, we talked about it too. So we probably don't need.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's Lake Webster. Okay.
I was expecting some like fancy native name.
It is a fancy. Okay, you're gonna make me say it again. You weren't on the show.
I have to say it, Russ.
All right, he wasn't on the show when I said it the last time.
Yeah.
So it's Chargagagog, Man Chagagog, Chabanagungamog.
That's actually the name of the lake.
That is the name of the lake.
That's seriously the name of the lake.
And how does that fit on a map?
It doesn't. That's why it's called Lake Webster.
Excellent.
So, oh,
very good.
So you can
have an episode on the origins of the name.
It's look it up on Wikipedia. It's there.
Yeah, sure. I'll just type that in right now.
If you start,
take me till the end of the show.
If you start out with Chargogg, you'll find it. Because there is no other combination. You know, there's nothing else with that combination of letters in it.
Good point. Try that later. Later on during the musical interlude.
There you go. You'll have a couple of minutes to work with it then.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, we're going to talk to Jonathan about what's going on with him in the second segment of the show after the first musical break. But there are some other things that we're going to talk about. And Jonathan, of course, I already mentioned this to you, but we'll say it live that you can jump in on any of these topics if you like. Would you be interested in getting onto the Etherpad? Would that help you out at all so you know what we're talking about?
It's not really accessible, so you don't have to worry. I can roll with the punches.
It's all text.
Yeah, but it's all JavaScript and it's hit or miss.
Oh, okay. In that case, sorry.
No problem.
I can paste it all into a Skype text. You can have 3 pages to read.
Yeah, no, it's okay.
All right. Well, you'll know what we're talking about when we talk about it. So I'll go ahead and hit the first topic here since I put this one in. On December 13th, a long-awaited operating system based on Linux called SteamOS from the folks over at Valve was released. A beta of it, anyway, was released. There is no real easy way to install SteamOS at this point. You have to download it onto, or they expect you to download it onto a USB flash drive on bare metal and then load it that way. However, YouTube, being my new best friend, was able to find a video where they explained how you can take a couple of utilities and convert the SteamOS installer to an ISO and then get it to run pretty adequately, actually, inside of VirtualBox, which is good for me because I don't have a bunch of bare metal computers lying around that I can install SteamOS. And its specifications or its expected, you know, performance metrics are pretty steep. They actually want you to have at least 4 gigs of RAM. They want you to have 128 megs or better of video RAM, and a lot more than that is even better still. You have to have an NVIDIA chipset because all of the performance enhancements are based on the proprietary NVIDIA drivers. And they want you to have a terabyte of hard drive space because of all, you know, the games, when you download them, they're all, you know, DVD sized or larger. So you have to have a lot of space in order to keep them on your local machine.
Mind you, a tera is pretty standard now in most machines anyways.
That's true. But we're talking about people who run Linux and who generally want things or expect things to be somewhat smaller and less resource intensive, shall we say. And this kind of is exactly the opposite of that. But if you are a gamer and you want to take advantage of Steam, you can actually do that on Ubuntu already. But SteamOS is something that Valve has said they're going to release just so that you can do the install and have Steam at your fingertips, all ready to go. And as it happens, that's exactly what you get. What's interesting about SteamOS is that while they originally made it Steam available for Ubuntu, SteamOS is based on Debian. I actually think that's cool because, quite frankly, I hate Ubuntu at this point. Hate's probably a strong word. I don't hate Ubuntu, but I like Debian more.
You dislike it very much.
Yeah. It's more that I just don't use it anymore because I don't see the point in it. I think their choices don't line up with my mental alignment, if that's a way to say anything. And Debian...
Does anything line up with that?
Probably not.
Maybe you could say you don't agree with them philosophically.
Well, it's not even a philosophical issue. I just think they've done some stupid things. And stupid is not a philosophy. Unless you're Ubuntu, I guess. I don't know. If you want to install SteamOS, you go ahead and try it. You should not be a super Linux noob if you attempt this, because it's not like a live ISO you can pop in, you know, click, click, bang, you're done. You do have to do some work. I'm going to post a link to the YouTube video that I saw so that if you don't want to do it exactly the way they have and you don't have a bare metal machine, you want to try it inside of a virtual machine, you can do that as well. It's not terribly difficult, but it does require some CLI work and some non-intuitive, you know, typing, stuff that I'd never actually seen before because it has a UEFI bootloader and some weirdness that I'm not used to. So even I wouldn't have been able to figure it out without the video. Linux god that I am. So, right. Yeah, right. Oh, good. I wish we could get Bill Cosby on here.
Well, you're pretty good with Linux, so I'll give you that. You are somewhat of a Linux deity.
A demigod, perhaps.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Okay. It is out there. It is worth a try if you want to try it. Especially if you're into the Valve games and the whole Steam platform, it is definitely worth a try. The interface is straight up GNOME 3. Based on Debian 7, Debian Wheezy. And so if you install it and get it installed, you will see that it's very familiar to you. But like I said, it doesn't install like Debian Wheezy. it installs, you know, there are some basic instructions on the page, and links, of course, to the page and all that stuff will be in the show notes. So you'll have all of the information. You'll be armed with the tools you need in order to install this if you so wish to do so. But you'll find that it's a little non-intuitive, a little slower than average, a bit buggy, but it does do what it says. And I assume by the time they have a release candidate and an actual release where they, you know, bundle it up as an ISO, this will be something worth using. But if you're one of those bleeding edge type folks, you know, here you can get in on the ground floor.
I don't have a popular view on this, so your listeners may not appreciate my opinion on this topic. I am a free software advocate, and actually I was appointed director of accessibility for the Free Software Foundation like a week ago. So I'm not speaking on behalf of the FSF. I'm speaking on behalf of just me as a free software advocate. Steam on GNU Linux is a bad thing, and I'm not a fan of it at all. I hope that they do whatever they're doing and don't say they're using Linux and do their own thing and sandbox everything, because Steam on GNU Linux and, you know, running on top of free software like this is not good for free software. They're pushing their proprietary software on top of this. People say, like, well, Steam's doing a great job. They're getting, you know, the NVIDIA drivers to work better. Yeah, they're getting the proprietary drivers to work better. They're creating more proprietary software on top of my, you know, free software. And what worries me is that this will be successful, and then other companies are going to say, hey, Steam's doing pretty well over there. Let's start pushing our proprietary garbage on top of Linux also. And then before you know it, what used to be a 98%, 99% free operating system is now 50% free, because, you know, Steam and other companies are going to take advantage of this, and they don't care, like, what GNU Linux is, what free software is. They could care less. All they know, it's free, and they could take advantage of it. And so that's why I'm not a fan of Steam.
So Steam is proprietary then?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
It is proprietary. I guess I should have pointed that out first thing, but
maybe it's an obvious thing for some Linux peeps, but I did not know that.
I think the Steam audience is the Steam audience regardless. There's always been the people who use open source software and don't give a rip about free software and what it means.
Yeah.
For these people, I think it's a good thing. And I honestly don't know that it's going to take off in a direction that's going to kill free software in favor of proprietary software. I don't think it has that kind of leverage. I understand your perspective. I just don't see it quite that pessimistically, I guess.
It won't kill free software. Free software, I mean, it really can't die.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. I think we lost him.
NSA got him. He says free software can't die. That was the last we ever heard from Jonathan.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay. That's weird. I could still hear you guys, but you couldn't hear me.
Free software can't die.
point taken. But Steam is proprietary, but it's free. It's monetarily free.
Free as in cost, right?
It's free as in cost, but it's not free as in you can't get the code.
Software freedom, correct.
Okay. Right.
So, I said,
I can see where people would be fooled by that. Then they'd be like, "Oh, that's awesome."
Yeah, and like I said, my opinion isn't very popular. Every time the topic comes up, I voice my opinion, and no one really appreciates it. But I'm just looking at it from, if it succeeds, this could possibly happen, and that's why I'm not a fan of it. And like I said, free software won't. I mean, it'll never kill it, but and there'll always be like distributions that focus on, you know, software freedom and wanting to be as pure as possible, but I'd rather them embrace how free software works. I mean, Red Hat is a perfect example of a company that could do that. They work with free software. They work in the free software community. They know exactly how it works, and they contribute tons of stuff to the free software community. You know, they do like 10 or 20% of kernel patches. They do 10 or 20% of GNOME development. They've created Network Manager, all types of things. And they give back, and yet they're a $1 billion company. So it can be done. You don't have to be this proprietary software company, you know, using quote unquote open source software, leveraging it to benefit you, and then just make all kinds of money and not give anything back. So Red Hat's the perfect example that it can be done.
Yeah, I think
the other side. Sorry, go ahead, Russ.
No, go ahead, Pete. I've talked enough.
I was just going to say that it's happened before too. I mean, it's not the first time that somebody will piggyback on Linux and use it for their own profit. Not that it's right. I mean, I'm just saying,
right,
they're not the first people to do it. Using my headphones.
I think this is okay in the sense that the audience for Steam in the first place is already rooted in proprietary software. They're used to game consoles and stuff like that, where everything is proprietary and they have to pay for everything. And I honestly think that if anyone's going to be using Steam on Linux, they're going to do it from the right perspective, because if they know anything about Linux anyway, they already understand the underlying free software concept, and anybody else who is into the is a console gamer will just stick to being a console gamer or using Windows or whatever. So
yeah, that's why I hope Steam keeps moving their Steam box along. It becomes its own appliance and they can just do whatever it is they want to do.
All right, Pete, this next one's yours, so go for it.
Twitter from the command line. So for all you command line junkies there, I won't go into detail on this, but I was on a website called Xmodulo, xmodulo.com, and it's basically a Linux tips website. For those of you who want to check it out, they have all kinds of neat little tricks and tips for you on there. This was posted December 16th, so it was yesterday, I guess. And basically, they say that there's really no shortage of Twitter clients available. You know, they all kind of differ in their interfaces, and, you know, there's mobile applications and PC applications and this and that. But for those who want to do it from the command line, there's one called T. It's a single letter tool called T, and it's a command line Twitter client written in Ruby. So despite its bare bones user interface, Twitter CLI T boasts very powerful features. They claim deeper history search, multi-threaded API access, spreadsheet integrations, et cetera, et cetera. So on top of that, you can also pipe its formatted output to all kinds of other CLI tools. So they claim that its possible use cases are virtually limitless. So on the website, there'll be a link in the show notes. There's a little tutorial that explains how to install your Twitter client from the command line if you're so interested. I won't go into all the gory details, but basically either Debian, Ubuntu, or Mint, you have one command line command, and also CentOS, Fedora, and RHEL. And, you know, it's the typical string sudo apt-get install ruby-dev, and then you go string sudo gem install t. And then after that, you got to go through the various steps. Create your Twitter application. You got to create it. You got to get into your apps and check your settings, yada, yada. So anyhow, the tutorial is quite complete. It's not that long either. I was going to give it a try. But I kind of got sidetracked, so my daughter decided to give us a little private recorder concert because she's playing in the Christmas concert at her school. But I digress. Anyhow, so if you're interested, all you command line junkies, want to get onto Twitter now, you can do it too. So check it out; it'll be in the show notes.
All right. And as it happens, after I got this little bit of information, I went through all of the steps and tried it out.
Excellent. I should have, you should have told me that, and then we could have looked more professional and said, and we tried it. And here's the review. Take it away, Russ.
Well, as it happens, you have to go through all of the developer crap, because in order to get access, in order for the T client to get access to your Twitter account, you have to basically allow it as a developer tool. You have to have it as if you're running your own application, like you created T yourself. So you have to go into the Twitter development tools, authorize, you know, the application T for your particular machine that you're, it's not for your machine, but you have to authorize it so that you can use it, so that when you actually run the T commands, it knows which user accounts and everything that on Twitter that it's supposed to be looking at. But once you go through all of those hoops and get it to work, it's actually very intuitive. You just do a T by itself, or a T help, and it gives you a help screen of all the things you can do. And it's pretty cool, because you get a lot of functionality and stuff that you can do on Twitter, like through the web interface, but it's really hard to do, like searching and lists and stuff like that are not terribly intuitive, but you can do searches, find lists, scan users, and you can also create a live feed of your Twitter feed in a terminal, which is what I'm doing right now. I actually have a Gterm window open. I ran T stream with the option for getting my personal Twitter stream, and it's scrolling away right now. I'm looking at all the people tweeting out there next to my IRC window, which is really cool. Plus, what's interesting is this is all text-based output, so that if you have another application or another script that can read this data and parse it in some way, you can just pipe the output of the T command or the T application into that and have it do nifty, neato things, which I'm going to explore further because I have a couple of ideas about what could be done with this. But and like sending an update is as simple as typing T space status space and then your status, and then it updates Twitter and everybody gets to see, you know, what it is you've just tweeted about. So it's very cool. It's very intuitive. I've actually used a similar type text-based Twitter thing to integrate Twitter with my IRC account so I can actually see tweets in IRC, which is way more complicated than this. But I love being able to access Twitter in some other way than the web, because the web interface, while moderately useful, is kind of a pain in the ass. I love this. It wasn't too hard to install. And just having this, you know, the tweets scroll by on my screen as I'm sitting here podcasting is kind of cool. I like it a lot. And I think this would work out well for you, Jonathan, if I don't know if you're even on Twitter, but, you know, having a raw interface to it like this would probably be great for screen reader.
Yeah, I ran, there was another one I was running for a little while, and I can't, it's like T-W-E-R-T-T-E-R, something like that. It was kind of Twitter spelt really weird. I was using that one for a while, but my new favorite, I used to use Pigeon, but that didn't work anymore once Twitter changed its API recently, and the Pigeon plugin wasn't updated, so that doesn't work anymore. But I found a new favorite Twitter app called Corebird. Unfortunately, it only runs on Arch Linux right now. It's a very, very new program. It's like, they almost say they don't recommend using it, but it's very usable. It's accessible. I actually emailed the guys on their GitHub account and said, hey, can you fix a couple of these things? I'm a blind user, and so, you know, these keyboard commands don't work. And he was like, oh, yeah, you know what? I never thought of that. Thanks for reminding me. He like went ahead and did it, emailed me back in like, I don't know, an hour, and said, all right, you know, update the app. You should be all set. I updated it, and boom, it worked. I was like, that's awesome. So I've been using Corebird.
All right, cool. Another application I haven't heard of. But then, you know, since you have a unique perspective, or not a unique perspective, but a differing perspective than most of the rest of us, you find out about all these cool things that we don't know about. Well, I love the silence. That's my favorite part of the show. So are we done with that?
I believe so.
I have nothing to add.
All right. Well, let me give you my free nickel tour of Fedora 20, which I just found out about today. I think I said something about Fedora 18. I think it was Fedora 18 when that came out, or maybe it was Fedora 19. I briefly talked about it on the show and basically said it was the worst piece of junk ever, and that I tried to install it like 15 different times in 15 different ways and could not get it to install once in any of those ways. I can't remember if it was 18 or 19. I think it was 19. But as it happens, in the way that Star Trek movies, the odd ones suck and the even ones are good, that is kind of what happened with Fedora 20. I downloaded this earlier. It has a live install DVD. Downloaded it as an ISO and booted it up into a VirtualBox virtual machine. And I have to say, the installer for Fedora 20 has got to be the best installer I have ever seen for any Linux distribution.
That's quite the turnaround, because everyone said 19 was the worst installer.
I don't know what maybe they were making 19 so incredibly bad, so 20 would look so incredibly good.
Yeah, there you go.
That's possible.
But even if 19 hadn't sucked, if I had never used 19 before, 20 is just amazing. Like, it blows away the Debian install. Now, I will say that it's graphical, so it's probably, from an accessibility perspective, it's probably terrible.
No, thankfully, 19 is actually was the first installer that they actually made it accessible. I have not tried 20 yet. I just found out about it today also, so we'll be trying it out. But I've heard through other blind users, though, that it's even better than 19 for accessibility, so I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, that's amazing then, because for a sighted user, the installer is freaking amazing. Yeah, I mean, I would install Fedora now just to use it, just for the installer, because I have never seen anything that is simpler and more intuitive. Ubuntu, you need to, like, Ubuntu used to be like the sort of Cadillac of, you know,
installers.
Yeah. Well, now they can take a page from Fedora's book because it is truly amazing. I mean, it does everything in the background. The idea, a few Linux distributions in the recent past have come out with the idea of being able to interact with the installer while the installer is actually going on. They actually, you know, realize that computers can multitask at this point, you know,
right?
How many decades afterwards. A lot of the stuff goes on in the background while you're doing things like setting up user accounts and stuff like that. Well, Fedora has made this so seamless, it's unreal. It's basically, you know, you boot the thing up, you say, I want to install it. It's four clicks and done.
Wow.
It's and it looks good to boot. I mean, I have to give huge kudos to Fedora, the Fedora project, for this latest release. I mean, and once it, you know, once it boots up, it's a GNOME shell, you know, GNOME 3 environment, and it worked flawlessly for me inside Virtual Machine. And I can only imagine how well it would work under, you know, on bare metal.
Yeah, GNOME 3.10 is really the best GNOME release yet, and 3.12 is looking even better. I've been running GNOME 3.10 on Arch here, and I used to be probably the biggest GNOME hater when it first came out. You know, it was accessible-ish, but they really broke a lot of accessibility. I wasn't happy with the performance. I thought it was unnecessary, but 3.10 has come a long ways, and I now am a huge fan of the shell.
Yeah, and originally I kind of got away from Fedora because they used KDE. I'm not sure when they switched back to GNOME, but I remember Fedora being very KDE-centric for a long while. And of course, I haven't touched it in a while because I've been more on the Debian side of things. But I am going to install Fedora 20 on something because I like it a lot. And I mean, I didn't get a chance to play around with the apps and stuff like that, but it looked like, you know, the base set of applications that it was installed was a good set, intuitive, not huge. Not like overbearing, just sort of a nice selection of the things you would want to have. And the GNOME 3 interface was very nice, very slick looking. They didn't touch it a lot. I don't get excited about software that much because I've been doing this way too long, but just to see that something different has come around and to be as good as it actually is exciting. And it's weird because I like want to go install it again just so I can see the installer again. It was so cool.
Try this. So it's, you're saying that it's a noob could put this in.
Absolutely.
Could install this. Yeah,
absolutely. It's
the easy. Image it's, is really small. It's smaller than a gig for the 64-bit image. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah. No, the whole thing
really
is impressive.
They really don't load it up with a lot of stuff.
Oh, I'm on the website right now.
Yeah,
check it out.
Back when we used to say that Fedora was more of a, you know, a power user distribution, not anymore. If Fedora 20 is as easy as it actually felt to me today, I would recommend that anyone use it. I mean, it's pretty amazing.
I'm gonna give it a shot this week. I haven't forayed into Fedora yet, so
I'm probably gonna look at it more, and maybe we can do a little more of an in-depth look at it in a future episode. Because really, once I got it into GNOME shell interface, it was basically the same as all the distributions that I've ever used that use GNOME shell. So I didn't poke and prod in it to see how different it was. Just as from the, you know, power it up and get it installed perspective, it's outstanding. And it looks like from an accessibility perspective, it's outstanding as well. So double thumbs up, or triple, well, six thumbs up, I guess.
Yeah, there you go.
All right.
I haven't installed it yet, so I'm not sure if my thumbs are up, but
I bet they will be.
I'm definitely going
to
give it a shot.
I'm willing to bet they will be.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'm going to have to flush HamOS, though. I'll throw it on the 43 and see how it does. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, right. All right. Well, with that, we finally made it through the first segment.
Not bad.
I know. I had it scheduled for 15 minutes. It took 43.
Oh. You can all thank me for that one.
I know. It's a group community effort.
That's right. All right, so with that, we're going to play some music. And this first one is a song that Pete came up with several weeks ago, and it's finally come around to where I'm going to play it. So I'll let you go ahead and introduce it, Pete.
That was only 2 weeks ago that I had submitted and resubmitted. This is a group out of Athens, Greece, called Ten Code. It's the album is called The Connection, and that's the title track called The Connection. Runs 3:48. It's got a little bit of a grunge feel to it. It's got a lot of a grunge feel to it. I must admit, I'm a bit of a fan of old school grunge, and this sounds pretty much like it. So released this past September 2013. Hope you enjoy The Connection by Ten Code.
All this darker suspicion got my head in a trance. Measuring my condition, do I still have a chance? The mission of the ones who deny. All these sacred submission to the lies in the night.
Got to put my hair out.
All right.
Yeah. Pretty good. Scorcher. Very grungy. Yeah,
little ditty to wake you up there before the next section.
That's right. And we all want to be awake for this. So this next segment is why Jonathan is here, because he's going to talk all about the Accessible Computing Foundation and his new project to make a certain screen reader, an open source screen reader, the best that it can be. So do we need to ask you questions, or are you just going to launch in and go for it?
Well, I guess before I launch into that, I do want it, because you guys were wondering what I was doing with the BeagleBone Black, so if I could give you a real
quick
update on that.
Yeah, sure, I'd love to hear about that.
So, first of all, the BeagleBone Black is a far superior over the Raspberry Pi. So, if anyone is looking at buying, you know, either one of the two and you're not sure which one you want, spend the extra $10, get the BeagleBone Black. Way, way better. The Ethernet port is not connected to the USB hub. On the Raspberry Pi, it is. So, the Ethernet connection is slower. The BeagleBone, I believe, is a few, like 300 megahertz faster. Has the same amount of RAM. It's just overall a better performing board. You can install Ubuntu on the BeagleBone Black if you want, Android, Arch Linux. I think OpenSUSE has something, and there might be one or two others that I'm forgetting. The plan that I want to do with the BeagleBone Black, which is a little pushed back off to the side right now, but one of my board members on the ACF has just helped someone start a school for the blind in Nepal. And in Nepal, there's 200,000 blind people that live there, and really none of them have any technology at all whatsoever. They're still in Nepal literally printing Braille books on the fly to help out blind people in school. So there's like zero technology there. So what I want to do is build basically like a sonar image for the BeagleBone and find a way to get a bunch of them over there and build BeagleBone labs. Or, you know, the blind individuals can carry them back and forth between their house and school and have ways to hook them up. That way they have access to a computer, be able to get online, be able to study, be able to write, you know, papers, be able to read electronic documents, and it will put them in a way better position than they're in right now. Because if vision impaired people in Nepal don't, you know, graduate high school, which a lot of them unfortunately don't, and the majority of them do not go on to college, there's no infrastructure there to help them out financially. So they then become, I don't want to say a burden, but, you know, then their family has to take care of them, or they have to, like, you know, beg on the street or something. And there's really no good opportunities for blind people there. So I'm hoping a lab of BeagleBone Blacks at schools like the School of Nepal or this blind school. And there's like five offices with the Nepal Association for the Blind. So if we can, you know, put a bunch of BeagleBones in there for people to use, and I'm still ironing out a lot of the details, but that's the vision I have with the BeagleBone.
That's pretty cool. I used to work for a place in Alberta called the Banff Center for the Arts that had a division called Mountain Culture, and Mountain Culture did exactly what it was called. It promoted the fact that, you know, there's mountain cultures all around the world, and of course Nepal, being a mountain culture, was very present in a lot of the discussions and presentations and et cetera, et cetera. So that's cool. That's an excellent project. Very valid indeed.
Very much so.
Couldn't have gone to a better recipient, I think.
Thank you very much. I was so excited when I won. So I knew exactly what I was going to do with it before I won it. I was like, man, if I win it, this is totally what I'm going to do.
There you go. Karma came to you.
So now what I'm doing is I've launched an Indiegogo campaign. If you want, the short URL for it is igg.me/, and then you spell out at. You don't use the at sign. So it's /AT/Orca. So it's igg.me/@/Orca. And what you'll find here is there's 360 million vision impaired people in the world. 90% of these vision impaired people live in developing countries. 80% of vision impaired people in the United States are unemployed. So there is screen reading software that's proprietary and is sold for an obnoxious amount of money. It can go from anywhere from $1,000 to $1,500. Now, with this software being that expensive, this means the majority of the vision impaired people throughout the world don't even have an opportunity of getting the software. There are entities and nonprofits and NGOs that will, you know, pay for this software for blind people to use, but there's only so much money, it only goes so far, and there's a small amount of those people that actually get access to a computer. So what I want to do with Indiegogo campaign, there is a free software screen reader called Orca, which is what I use, and Orca can be installed on any GNU Linux distro. It runs the best in the GNOME desktop right now. Orca works, it's comparable to the proprietary software right now. I strictly use Orca. I graduated college using Orca. I don't ever boot into any other operating system other than GNU Linux, so it does work. But the problem is there's sort of like all these nagging bugs. That, you know, it's kind of like what's that saying, like death by 1,000 paper cuts or whatever. There's all these little things that are kind of issues that people overlook, and you just learn how to deal with it, and you can still get on with life and get what you want to get done. Well, in order for I want mass adoption of Orca and free software for not just for vision impaired people, but I'm trying to focus specifically on this, and I'll get to that that reason why. But really, what for mass adoption, Orca needs to be 10 times better than any other screen reading software. And I spoke with a investor in Boston a few months ago. He was very interested in this, and he suggested I start the Indiegogo campaign. And he's going to be coming in on the campaign sooner than later. I have to fix some email issues, which is really annoying, but that's a whole other story. So anyways, when I was talking to him, and I was telling him about all the stuff I'm working on with Sonar GNU Linux and all the assistive technology, he was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. He's like, slow down, take a breath. He's like, you're doing way too much. He's like, you're just spreading yourself thin. Nothing's ever going to get any better. You're just going to kind of keep trudging along. He's like, you need to take this screen reader and you need to make this thing 10 times better than anything else. He's like, that's the only way you'll ever get like mass adoption with something like this. You need to make it far better than everything else available and people will come running to it. Because, you know, using free software as opposed to proprietary software, this can be, you know, the difference between someone being able to use a computer or not. Like, there's plenty of people, you know, the 90% developing countries where their country's not shelling out $1,000, $1,500 for, you know, vision impaired people to use a computer. So making Orca 10 times better, I want to get this into the hands of, you know, the 360 million people. And who knows what will happen when these people finally have access to a computer? Who knows who's going to write the next great novel or the next great play, the next great movie? Who knows who's going to develop the next great web application, operating system, program? There's so much potential locked up in these people that we aren't even aware of. So I want to make Orca 10 times better and give them access to a computer maybe once for in their life. Maybe a lot of these people have never even been able to use a computer because they don't have the software that allows them to use it.
I have to agree with you, though, on accessibility, everything being so expensive. And I work in a rehabilitation hospital, in a pediatric rehab center. And I know what families go through and how they're stretched to the bone with their time and their resources and their money. Yeah. And paying $1,000 for software is really totally inaccessible for the majority of people. I agree with you. So if you could make it anywhere, any more accessible, and on top of that, improve it, I mean, that's the golden formula right there. Like,
yeah,
they say, so, come running to it for sure.
So we're looking to raise $100,000. And basically what this would do right now, currently, there's one developer working on Orca, just one. You know, the proprietary companies have a team of people. So there's one person working on Orca, and she's getting paid to do it by a company. But the caveat to that is she can only do what the company seems important to them for her to do, which is fine and understandable. So this $100,000, we'd be able to hire two full-time developers and triple the amount of people working on Orca and get triple the amount of commits going and start, you know, grinding away at these 1,000 paper cuts. And then we could start to really innovate on the screen reader and bring it to the whole next level. So that's, you know, the vision with the $100,000 to really give it that push to really get it going. And, you know, like I said, every GNU Linux distro will benefit from this work. I'm not, you know, we're not trying to hang on to it just to make Sonar better or whatever. Everyone will benefit from all this work. My main focus is making Orca better. So that way, like I said, the 360 million people will have access to a computer maybe once for in their life. So that's the big push with the Indiegogo campaign. This is only like the second day, third day. So we still have I think it ends January 13th or no, it might be January 16th or 17th actually.
Yeah, it says I'm on the website right now. It's 29 days left to contribute. If you've only been doing this for 2 days, it's already almost $600 in donations. So you're doing very well.
Yeah, it's going really well. Yeah.
I'm going to donate to this, Jonathan. I pledge to you right now.
Ah, thank you, sir.
I'm not going to do that right now because I'll probably crash my computer, but I'm going to. I haven't become a member of the Black Sparrow Media family yet, so I'm going to give that $20 to you instead.
Oh, thanks a lot, Jonathan.
Oh, so sorry, Russ. Now I'm magically going to disappear.
yeah, I'm going to get fired, but at least I will have supported your project, so it's all good.
All right, so you mentioned the Sonar project. Are you say you're going to focus on, you know, Orca based on the Indiegogo campaign. So are you going to put Sonar aside for now or still work on that or what?
Oh, no. Sonar is still full steam ahead. We just put out a new release based off of Ubuntu 13.10. I mean, that's going really well. Like I said, to really start pushing this to the next level, you know, we're going to make Orca as best as we can, you know, with this Indiegogo campaign. And hopefully, you know, when the money runs out paying the developers, hopefully something else will come up where we can continue to, you know, keep them hired, basically. And then once Orca is really at that higher level, then we can start focusing on the other assistive technology and making that even better. Because my main goal is for Sonar GNU Linux to be used by everyone that has any type of disability. Sonar has software in it for blind people, for low vision people, for people that have low motor skills where they might have only control of one good hand and the other hand doesn't work that well, or maybe both hands don't work that well. There's a font included for people with dyslexia. There's software on there where you can control the cursor of the mouse just by moving your eye or head. So all of these things we want to improve on also, but Orca is the first thing we're just going to be laser focused on and really get it to the next level. But you know, the 10-year goal is for Sonar to be used by everyone that has any type of disability. There should be no reason, you know, this day and age, why no matter what type of physical hurdle you might have, that we can't, you know, these people can't use a computer that's been around since the 1970s. Like, there's no excuse for it. And so that's Sonar's goal, is to bring access to everyone. Because really, in the world, there's up to 1 billion people in the world with some type of disability. So, again, why I'm focusing on Orca, because the 360 million is a good chunk of that 1 billion. So that's, again, also why we're focusing on Orca. But like I said, the end goal is for Sonar to be used by everyone that has, you know, any type of disability. And even down the road, Sonar will even be able to, you know, create jobs for people, like, you know, people in Bangladesh or somewhere in India or somewhere in South Africa. You know, these blind people or vision impaired people or whatever disabilities they might have, they could start their own support groups for Sonar within their town, their region, you know, their continent, whatever. They could become developers. They could start making Orca better themselves, making the screen magnification better themselves. They could get paid for it. Really, the sky would be the limit once we can, you know, the first hurdle is getting access for everyone. But once that happens, then really the sky's the limit. It can create jobs. It can, you know, we'll encourage entrepreneurship for everyone to, you know, just find a way to start filling a niche. And we'll all serve one another within the disabled community. We'll all be in control of this because it's free software. And free software is what gives the opportunity for this to actually happen. We, you know, the people that depend on the software will actually be in control of the software and be able to decide how well it, you know, I mean, obviously you want it to work as well as you want, but they'd be able to decide what gets added, what doesn't get added. They'll know what features are needed. They'll know what things should get pushed back and what things should get pushed forward. We'll be in complete control of our computing and have complete access to our computers.
Cool. No, that's, again, because of where I work, I can totally see that we have a whole division of people who work on trying to find different softwares and apps to put on various platforms. And it's the same thing. Governments have no money. And certainly when it comes to rehab, because rehabilitation, it's not like, it doesn't have the punch that, you know, that breast cancer does. So they don't get the same funding that they do, as I'm sure you know, right?
Oh yeah.
So it's hard for them to come up with the funding, because everything is high tech right now. And because we work in a pediatric hospital, everybody, you know, all the kids today have smartphones and tablets and iPads and things of that nature. And the people who need accessibility, they can't have access to the software, as we were saying. So I can completely see a whole bunch of people at our hospital just falling in love with this. If I have your permission, I'm definitely going to point them in your direction, or at least to the website,
please,
to see if they can use any of this now or in the future, or help out in any way. We don't have any software developers. Our people are the people who implement the apps. But I mean, I'm my mind's racing 1,000 miles an hour right now. I think this is so cool.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, bringing awareness is, you know, almost as important, maybe if not more important than development, because a lot of people don't realize that this is a, you know, it's legitimate. It's, you know, you can actually use free software. It's not, you know, it's not a toy. You can really get things accomplished using it.
Absolutely. No, I think that's very cool. What do you have to say, Russ?
Well, I think that's entirely true. And I was going to tie that back to a comment I heard on another podcast about the future direction of open source software, but you know, it's too pessimistic, so forget that. Well, I think the guy was on crack anyway, but I don't want to promote podcasts where the people are on crack when they're talking.
Yeah, exactly. Stuff. Say no to drugs, kids.
That's right. No, but this is very cool. I mean, we here at Linux and the Ham Shack have been enthusiastic about all of your projects as they've come along, because we can always tie them back to ham radio in particular, because since it's an audio medium, it's available to people with disabilities, including, you know, the blind population.
Yeah.
So we always like to talk about ways to improve accessible computing here, because a lot of digital mode communication and ham radio software happens using computers. And of course, in order, you know, it's easy enough to, you know, to tune the dials and to hear what you need to hear as a person who is not sighted, but you have to have the corresponding ability with the computer technology in order to be able to do the decoding and whatnot. And I think it's always useful when we hear about projects that are advancing the state of the art in accessible computing. And I'm not aware of any other foundations or even groups of people or even single people other than you who are really focused in this area. I'm sure they're out there, but no one, it seems, is more dedicated and more vocal about these issues than you seem to be. So I love getting your perspective on things and to hear all the things you're doing.
Yeah, I don't. I've been thinking about this for a while too. I don't know if this is, you know, true or not, but coming from, you know, like I said, at the age of 14, I got in a car accident. But before then, you know, I was totally fine. I never broke a bone in my life. Nothing. I got in the car accident and I lost my sight. I had the worst head trauma UMass Hospital has ever seen. I pretty much mangled everything from my neck above and nothing from my neck down. And so I wasn't born with a disability or born with any kind of difficulties. And I've seen some blind people and other people with difficulties that were born that way. And this is, you know, my opinion. If anyone has, you know, a family member that's, you know, has a physical hurdle or whatever, this is a very broad brush or whatever. But this is just what I've noticed throughout the years. I feel like people that are born with a disability or a physical hurdle are kind of prodded, it's not the right word, but kind of coddled along and just said, well, you know, here's this little handout, be happy with this. Or, you know, well, we can't do that for you, but we can do this for you. And you're almost trained to like settle. And
yeah, I have to agree with you. I see it all the time from the other side. I see it happen.
Yeah. And so me, I wasn't born that way. And, you know, so I had 14 years of not settling. And I think that's why I'm so vocal. I'm like, it doesn't have to be this way. It shouldn't be this way. Things can be done. And this is my total passion. I'll do whatever I have to do to get this done. This is not impossible. It may take a long time, but this is not impossible. And like I said, there's no reason this day and age why everyone with any type of disability shouldn't be able to use a computer. It's just no one thinks that the population is worth it, or there's not enough of us. But when I mentioned there's 360 million vision impaired people in the world, everyone is blown away by that. They're like, wow, really? And I'm like, yes. And, you know, no one realizes there's a billion people with some type of disability. You know, that's 1/6, 1/7 of the population. That's nothing to scoff at. But people or companies or whatever just deem it not worth their time. They can't make enough money doing it or whatever. And so they just, you know, they'll do their good deed and throw, you know, the disabled community a bone and just kind of like, hey, you know, we did our job, you know, we did this or whatever. But it's never good enough. It's just good enough to say they did something.
Yeah, that's usually the case, isn't it? It's just a little kid.
Yeah. And so that's really my goal. Like with Sonar, with Orca, like I said, there's no reason why using free software, everyone with any type of disability, you know, they'll be able to use a computer. If they install Sonar, it'll meet all of their needs. And then once Sonar starts to gain traction, you know, hopefully more and more developers will want to, you know, innovate on top of Sonar and do things no one's ever thought of. Maybe there'll be, you know, science labs that are doing particular studies on people with, you know, brain trauma to like even figure out how to control a computer using, you know, different things attached to their body or whatever. I mean, I really think Sonar has a great future. And like I said, this could be 10, 15 years out, but I'm in this for the long run.
Maybe not even that far, because I see them, we have a lot of a lot, a certain number of people who come in who are basically, they can't move from the neck down, so they adapt their wheelchairs with these micro switches and just with small move. I mean, you've seen this, right? With small movements of the head, you can control exactly where they're going. And they drive better than I drive my car once they get the hang of it.
But yeah,
I could
exactly.
totally see that, you know, for various, I mean, it's the same thing as moving a mouse, really. So why couldn't they do that? And probably not even that far away.
Yeah, and I think too, you know, again, this is a broad generalization or whatever, but I think a lot of people write off people with disabilities, they discount them thinking like, oh, well, you know, he's blind. I mean, what can he actually do? You know, like, you can't do that if you can't. You know, I've had people, like, when I first, you know, lost my sight, literally, they'd be like, well, how do you get dressed? I'm like, how do you get dressed? I'm like, you know, like, really? You know, it's like, but there's people out there that are just like, oh, you know, well, what can you do? You can't see, you know, like, how do you go to the bathroom? It's like, come on, people. Like, just because I can't see doesn't mean I'm, you know, an invalid or whatever. I mean, there's a ton of blind guys that I know that are ridiculously smart, and like even way smarter than people that I know that can see. So it's
and all of them are going to the bathroom.
Yeah. And it's like, don't discount people just because they have a disability. There was a gentleman I knew that was a quadriplegic, the smartest accountant you'll ever meet in your life. And, you know, there's tons of amazing things that people can do. They just need access to a computer to enable them to accomplish something.
Absolutely.
If we haven't lost too much focus, we should probably go back to the original thing. And I know
it's all intermingled.
No, I'm not speaking to you all. I'm speaking to the listeners right now. I just want to bring it back to the fact that if you are able to, I know we're in the middle of the holiday season and this is going to come out right around Christmas time. So it's, you know, things are tough all over. I know, but I think this is more than a worthy project. The introduction video that you put up there, Jonathan, that sort of outlines what you're planning to do is outstanding. And, you know, in 2.5 minutes really packs a punch as far as telling everyone what you're planning on doing and how it will help people both here in the United States and abroad. You reference Nepal many times, but I mean, it's more global than that. It speaks to everyone with a disability. So I definitely would encourage our, you know, we have somewhere between 1,000 and 2,000 listeners to this show. You know, if every one of those people could spare even $5 or $10 to this,
that'd be a huge difference.
Yeah, I know. That would be an amazing step towards your goal. And I know you're going to be promoting this all over the place. And I really hope that everyone can give a little something, you know, if they're able to. And the URL for this is igg.me/AT/Orca. I encourage everyone who listens to this show to give a couple of bucks if you can. You know, there are lots of projects in the world that are worthwhile, but this is one that's close to us and important to me, you know, being with someone for a long time who's had disabilities and challenges in his life. And, you know, I know it's, like you said, one in seven people has some sort of physical, mental, emotional challenge, whatever.
Yeah.
I hope everyone can help do something about that. So
yeah, and also one last thing. If you can't pledge, I totally understand. And sometimes what's even worth more than pledging is use your social networks, Google+, Facebook, Twitter. If you can go to that link, there's a bunch of social networking buttons, like the Google+, Facebook. You can like it and tweet. The more that those get plus one and tweeted and liked by Facebook, there's a better chance they'll put the campaign on the front page at some point, and it would get even more traffic if it's on the front page. So even that could possibly be worth more than, you know, even pledging to the campaign. So that would make a huge difference. Google+ is totally inaccessible to me. It's not useful at all for me. If you can just let everyone know about it on Google+, or like, you know, plus, I don't know what you call it, like mention particular people in the tech community and bring it to their attention, like, you know, like a Leo Laporte or whoever that you can think of that might have some clout to bring more attention to it, start digging them on Google+ and Twitter and Facebook or whatever. Like I said, that's just as important. So that would help out in a huge way, because I am not really able to do any of that. So that would be a lot of heavy lifting for me.
I know it's already been put out there by the Google+. I've shared it. Lots of people in the podcast, you know, in our particular podcast sphere have re-Googled it, if that's a thing. I posted it in the Linux community over on Google Plus, and that has something like 80,000 participants. I don't know I don't know if that's going to actually stay there. That's probably the kind of thing they're going to look at and go, oh, and delete it or something like that. Yeah. But, you know.
Well, at least it's there. So for some amount of time.
Right. Yeah, so
I'm going to do the same. The links will be in the show notes, of course, and I'm going to do the same. I apologize, Jonathan. Your email that you sent a little while ago actually ended up in my junk box, and I only found it today. So I did get a chance to watch the video. I'm wondering how did you get Stephen Hawking to do the voice of the computer?
Yeah.
You guys watch the YouTube video, you'll know that it's just a generic computer voice. But yeah, kind of.
Speaking of that, when I did do the Sonar campaign Indiegogo, I was able to get a better voice on there, which was one of the goals for Orca. That video was made before I got the newer voices.
Oh, okay.
So that's why they're not on there. But I do have much better sounding voices now for Orca.
Okay. That's good.
Yeah, well, I mean, audibility is something that you really need if you're using the screen reader.
It was audible. It's just very mechanical is all, you know.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, that was one of the hurdles that we overcome, because a lot of new users are going to be like, you know, what is this, 1984? Like, you know, because on the proprietary operating systems, the voices are much realer sounding. And so if you're like, oh, I use free software, use Orca, showing someone the new Fedora 20 desktop, like that they're used to that. And then give them Windows 95 and be like, oh, man, this is so much better. You should use this. And they'd be like, what? This thing's ugly. What are you talking about? I'm not going to use it. And so it's the same thing with the voices. A lot of blind users were kind of put off by the voice. So one of the hurdles was to get better sounding voices, which we accomplished. So that's one hurdle down.
Very good. So do you actually get real people, or you just get better programmers?
Actually, yes, you are. Because what I wanted to do is tie in. It's called OpenMERI TTS, and it's free software. Voice synthesizers. So literally you can get, you know, real people talking into a microphone, recording. I want to say, we haven't figured this out yet, like how to make it the best way to do it. But if you record roughly like 1,000 sentences, you could create a new voice, and it can just piece together all of the different consonants and vowels and prefixes and suffixes. And it sounds real.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, I would imagine that there's a certain amount of sentences or words or sounds that you just have to throw in, and the rest it could just kind of figure it out with, you know, various algorithms.
Exactly.
Very good. I don't know very much about voice synthesization, so that's why I was asking the question.
Synthesis. Easier to say. Yeah.
Voice synthesis.
Synthesization.
Synthesis.
A Canadian word.
Well, thank you, Jonathan, for that. Are you going to hang out for the last segment?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right, good deal. The next bit of music was actually a suggestion from a listener. So before we get to the music, I should probably have it introduced by the person who introduced it.
My name is Richard, and I have a song suggestion for Linux in the Ham Shack. It is a song very appropriate for amateur radio. The song is Satellite, is licensed under Creative Commons. So it is by a band called Drive, and they are from Germany, of course, and I believe perhaps Stuttgart, I'm not sure. But anyway, it would be very appropriate for a Ham Shack show. 7-3. 73.
I wish I knew who that was.
Oh, he didn't identify himself? I like how he says the band is called Sushi Drive-In, and they're from Germany, of course, because, you know, everybody knows that's where sushi originated.
Well, absolutely.
That's good. And the 73 was good, mystery caller. No worries there.
For half of that, I keep thinking it was Rich doing it, but I don't think he could say the German numbers that well. So
who knows?
So anyway, we have the song that he requested. I took a listen to it, and it sounds pretty good. So we're going to listen to that. It's called Satellite by Sushi Drive-In, as it was pointed out, a German band. We got this courtesy of Jamendo, and here it is. Yes. Another one to set your hair on fire, and there's been much discussion in the chat room about whether or not that caller was Richard, and I think the consensus is that it was. There's some clues in there for, you know, for one, the fact that he did not identify himself. The first half of the call, the German accent sounds very fake. Three, the part at the end there where he does say the 7-3 in German, it does sound pretty real, but, you know, you could, I suppose you could learn the proper inflection of two characters pretty easily.
Yeah, where'd the number come from? Didn't you see the phone number?
No. He said 7-3. He started to say 7-3, which is a ham sign off, and then kind of corrected himself and said, oh no, I meant...
Well, no, but I mean through Google Voice. Doesn't it show you the number that called?
No, it didn't come through Google Voice. It came through my Asterisk machine, and it just came in as a cell phone. So I do not have caller ID on that call, so he's keeping himself under the radar. So if you are an authentic German person, sorry about that, but we think...
Yeah, I was just going to say, you either hit the nail on the head, or you just very insulted somebody.
Yeah, I think we're fairly safe in saying that was Richard, but you know, if we're wrong, I do apologize sincerely.
If but, we're wrong, then give us another shout and let us know who you were, and we'll give you the right credentials, the right credits. Sorry.
Yeah, I think a person who called in with that suggestion, who really, you know, was a German person, would have said, you know, this is, you know.
This is an actual German person calling. There's Jay Lindsay in the chat room. Says, somewhere in Germany, a man sits in tears as Americans make fun of his accent. And I so have this vision of this South Park episode where they're playing baseball and they're making fun of the Japanese people. Actually, no, they're in Japan playing baseball, and the Japanese are making fun of the Americans. It's kind of the other way around. Anyways.
I think it would have been funnier if Richard actually had started off by saying, this is Richard. I am authentic German person.
next time.
Give me your papers.
Very good. We need order. Is it Fabua says that we need order. That was a good little ditty. That was very reminiscent of you know, bands like Simple Plan or Blink 182. I rather like that.
You know, I was thinking, it's amazing the sound quality bands can get these days. I mean, that, you know, 20 years ago, you would have to go to a studio to get that done. I mean, they probably did that in their basement or whatever.
Yeah, actually, I know some really young kids who do that, who do just amazing stuff just out of their basement. You just got a decent sound card now, a decent mic, and you know, Bob's your uncle, as it were.
Yeah.
All right. So I've got so much going on in my head right now.
All right. Another convert.
Excellent. I don't use my soundboard near enough. Shall I pick a random Richard quote to play?
Go for it.
All right. Pick a number between 1 and 12.
69.
Very good.
I don't know. Jonathan, go ahead.
7.
7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Can't believe I did the freaking hand thing when I said that.
Yeah. An oldie but a goodie.
Yep. I'm not even sure what he was referring to back then, but.
Probably don't want to know.
Yeah. I was going
to say. All right. Yeah. Now I got to get back to the window I was looking at before.
Segment 3. Come on.
I know. Rolling. All right. Sorry.
Losing steam, Russ. You're losing steam.
It's okay. We can edit this part out.
Well, if what you said earlier on was if we were to keep that as gospel, then me losing steam is all in good, you know.
touche.
Click on that. Very nice. Very nice. Well played.
All right. I listen to a lot of comedians, and the callback is like their coup de grace. So, segment 3, announcements and feedback. Our first announcement is we're going to be on break for an extra week. Our next show after this one will be on January 7th, 2014. So, this is the last episode of the year 21-3.
So. That's an interesting way to put it.
The reason for that is because exactly in 2 weeks is New Year's Eve, December 31st. So neither Russ nor I will be in any shape to record, most likely. That's not true. I will be. I have children. I'll be in the house.
That's no excuse, Pete.
Yeah. Actually,
well, the excuse is that I'm 48 and I just can't handle it anymore. If I drink, it takes me a week to recover, so I just avoid it altogether.
Well, that reminds me that on New Year's Eve and into New Year's Day, the Hacker Public Radio broadcast-a-thon will be going on. And I will
do you know the details of it, Russ? I haven't heard much about it lately.
Yeah, actually, all the details are over at hackerpublicradio.org, okay. But they will be streaming. There's four different streaming servers. Mine will be one of them. The Black Sparrow Media Network streaming server will be one of the places where you can hear the broadcast-a-thon. It will be starting 1 hour, the hour before New Year's, in the first place where New Year's happens, which is Christmas Island. And if I recall correctly, that is something like 4 a.m. Central Time, 5 a.m. Eastern, something like that.
Okay.
And then it goes for 26 hours straight. So they'll be broadcasting, whether it's music or chat or actual discussion or what. I don't know what will be happening in, you know, for sure, but there will be something broadcasting from Hacker Public Radio for 26 solid hours.
Are they using the Linux Basics Mumble Room to do that?
I can't remember if they were using the OpenSpeak one or if they found another one. But I believe all the information about it, if you want to participate, is on the website hackerpublicradio.org. And the information on where you can be in the Mumble chat is there. And the information on where you can pick up the live stream is also there.
Yeah, and please support them. They're a good bunch of people, a good project. I listen to some of their podcasts. There's some stuff on there I'm, you know, less interested in. Some stuff on there I'm more interested in. But there's something for everybody, and you know, or contribute. You know, record a couple of minutes and submit it to Hacker Public Radio, and be part of the solution.
Right. It's all community content. It's all user generated audio over there. So I've had a few shows and. Everybody who's a friend of ours and a podcaster has been on there. If you want to do a show that is of interest to hackers, which is the, you know, the fundamental tenet of the shows that show up over there, and pretty much every show is of interest to hackers. So anything you want to talk about, you can talk about. Just record a show. There's even a call-in line, which I also host. Information on that is...
Do you really? Wow. A man of many hats. Good for you.
So all of that stuff you can find at hackerpublicradio.org. Check it out.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool because they make it easy for you to start out too, because they just ask you record a podcast, you know, just 5 minutes on either how you got started in Linux or what's in your bag. If you know, if you carry a bag to work or a rucksack or a attaché case or whatever, you know, the weird little things. And I find myself listening to these more often than you would think. You'd think, oh, this is pretty dull, but no, it's kind of, I don't know, maybe it's the voyeur in me who likes to see what people, because I carry a backpack to work every day with, you know, my daily junk. It's kind of like my, I guess, a man version of a purse, I guess, but it's kind of interesting. And it's an easy way to get involved if you think you have nothing to contribute. Well, you know, you're wrong.
So have you done a Hacker Public Radio episode?
No, I've been meaning to, like many other things, many other projects. It's on my to-do list, on my bucket list, and I will get around to it. And most things on my bucket list, I'll get around to once my children are both teenagers and want nothing to do with that anymore and are spending all their time with their friends. And that's when I'll get all of my time back. So in a few years. But yeah, it's on my to-do list for sure.
Okay, well, just so you know, you owe Ken Fallon a show.
So I what?
It's a running joke if you're in the Hacker Public Radio. Basically, if you are a living, breathing entity, you owe Ken Fallon a show.
It's like one of those loser says what things, eh?
Yeah. It's when you sit there and hem and haw and say, well, I don't have time to participate. They always say, well, you owe Ken Fallon a show. And you will until you do one.
I will.
Yep.
Until I do one. That's correct. Right again, Russ.
Oh.
Don't you get tired of being right all the time?
No, never, as a matter of fact.
No, I don't.
Okay, where were we? Oh, yeah, that was
number one.
Right, that was supposed to last 2 minutes, and it went 12.
And I didn't even say anything.
Right. So the next thing is win a Raspberry Pi, and I don't really want to go through all of this again. All of the information's in the last episode. If you didn't get it then, you should just go back and listen to the last episode. If you want to hear all the text I would normally read, just go to lhspodcast.info/contests. All the information you need to enter is there. And basically it's a tell me what you want to do with a Raspberry Pi and you might win one. If you're a paid subscriber, you're already entered. You need do nothing. If you're not, you can call in or send us an email, or you could do something creative about a Raspberry Pi. And if you are chosen as the winner, you will receive a Raspberry Pi, an HDMI to DVI converter, so you can plug into a standard monitor, and a USB convertible wall outlet, plug-in device so that you can have power for your Pi.
Wow, you're going all out.
Yep, and that drawing will be in February. Episode 123, I believe it is, we'll be doing the drawing for that, and you have to get your entries in before February 1st.
So what Russ was saying is turn this podcast off right now and go listen to the last podcast so you can get all the details.
No, they don't. They need not do that because they've already listened to the last podcast, right?
Theoretically. Yeah, what if they're new listeners?
Right. If you're a new listener, just go to the website, lhspodcast.info/contests. That's the way to get the information quickly. But you could also go back and listen to episode 119 to get the information there as well.
Which was awesome.
It was awesome. Every episode was awesome, except the first one. The first one kind of sucked. Anyway.
So, I wasn't on that one. That's why.
That's right. All right. We have some audio feedback, which I actually have not listened to yet. So this could be interesting.
You haven't listened to it?
That's no. A good one. All right. Well, we're going to play it. It's from Rubens. I announced a contest he was participating in a few episodes back. Where he didn't do as well as he liked, but he is presumably thanking us for our shout out and whatnot. So I guess we'll hear what Rubens has to say.
Hello, Russ. Hello, Pete. Rookin here. Romeo Uniform Kilo India November. I am the guy from the episode 115, Rubens K. I was asking for votes for my art event. I was enrolled here in Japan, and that helps me a lot. Thank you very much. And I also want to say that your show is one of the best Linux podcasts out there. I enjoy a lot, and that helps me with my art, because while I was painting, I was always listening to your show and the other Linux podcasts as well. And that helped me with my English, and keep up with the Linux stuff. Thank you very much. That's it, guys. Keep up the good work and have a nice 2014. Rookin signing off. Bye-bye.
All right, cool. Well, that was from Rubens Kinjo is his name. And we went through all of that about his art project a few episodes ago, and he didn't actually mention the bit about the Accessible Computing Foundation in his voicemail, but I think we talked about it in that he was going to donate, I think it came out to $50, I think, or $100?
Yeah, something like it was that. $50. Yeah, Rubens came through, and he actually hit me up on Facebook and said, hey, this is what I plan on doing. I'm going to enter this contest, and you know, if I reach this level of votes, well, I'll donate this, and if I reach this, I'll donate that. I don't know what level he came in at, but he did, you know, win a little bit of prize money, and he said he would donate a portion of it to the ACF, and he is a man of his word, and he followed through. So, Rubens, I thanked you on Facebook and other social networks, but now I can audibly say thank you, my friend, for supporting the ACF. He supported us back on the Sonar campaign, and he's also a member of the ACF, and if you wanted to join the ACF, actually, you could go to theacf.co and become a member for $2 a month. And thank you, Rubens. It's greatly, greatly appreciated.
Yeah, very good, Kenpai, Rubens. It was funny because I was listening to the voicemail. And, you know, I'm a total ham radio operator. I'm more ham radio than Linux. And so he says, this is Rookin, Romeo Uniform Kilo India November. And you know, so he sounds his name out phonetically. And I'm like, Romeo Uniform Kilo India November. I'm trying to figure out where that call sign is from, not realizing that he's just spelling out his name. Like, Radio Uniform, is that Russia? He said he was from Japan. It took me like a good 3 or 4 minutes to realize what he was doing. It's like, you know, come on, wake up, Pete.
Yeah, actually, he's a Brazilian living in Japan.
Oh, good. Excellent.
That's very cool. I was trying to figure out his nationality situation because Rubens is not a Japanese name. but apparently he's been living there for some time because he seems fairly immersed in Japanese society. He would pass for Japanese as far as I can tell. That's very cool. Well, thank you very much for the feedback, Rubens. And thank you for saying did he say the best Linux podcast out there? Is that what he said?
He did, and he's right.
I thought he said the best podcast in the universe.
Well, could you
Let's
say
see
that
what the Podfather has to say about that?
Right. Could you say that again, Jonathan, and we'll just let you go ahead and say it with some space around it?
I thought he said it was the best podcast in the universe.
All right. Well, we're going to cut out the part and we're going to have a little sound bite where Jonathan says it's the best podcast in the universe.
All right. And that's exactly how they do it in the media. They take the words they want and use them to their advantage.
That's right. And I'm going to use all of the words he said in the proper order. I'm just going to omit a few.
There you go. Omit the key ones. Actually, no, we're keeping the key ones. That's good.
Yeah. All right, go ahead.
We're glad.
This show is becoming all about Mike into HTT, but we'll give him one more bit of feedback here before we move on. So
yeah, Mike, we're gonna pick on you again today. Mike's in the chat room actually, so welcome yet again, and thanks for supporting the podcast. Mike's actually a friend of mine. I'm Radio Buddy into HTT. Sent me an email on December 9th, and this is really he calls the email HamOS Redux and other news. And because he's been experimenting with HamOS and other Linux distributions in his quest to become Windows free, this has kind of been going on for a few weeks. And we're very thanks, Mike, for the feedback. I think this is cool, and I think it's nice to be able to kind of follow along one of our fellow Linux users in his trials and tribulations. So he writes, "Hi Pete, I wanted to let you know about two things that happened recently. First, I got HamOS to work on my tower." So he had installed HamOS originally and was having problems with it. And he says he likes it very much. Most of the issues he had earlier were either mistakes or inexperiences on his parts during the install. He says it's running very nicely now, and he's integrated the tower into the QRP side of the shack. For you non-ham radio people, QRP is the acronym. It's not an acronym. It's just the code for low power ham radio operations, usually 5 watts or less. Although QRP diehards would say that 5 watts is screaming, and usually we're talking hundreds of milliwatts. So there you go. So he says the QRP size of his shack where he's using HamOS for logging and for FLDigi. I was very happy to get HamOS going, he says. I felt I hadn't given it a fair shot. And it's really a very complete software with lots of stuff already installed. I'd actually emailed Richard, who developed the software, and he had mentioned that he probably could have helped with a lot of the bugs, but Richard, having recently moved and having a large family, just hadn't gotten around to get back to you, Mike. So he says that he's very happy that you got it running. And he says, secondly, and this is another thing I wanted to talk about, secondly, I've started a blog at WordPress about my ham radio and Linux experiences. So a very good compliment to Linux and the Ham Shack. And I think we'll be hearing a lot more from Mike in the future. He says there's only 4 posts so far, but he plans to have many more. He's only been running the site for since November, so really 4 posts is more than adequate. It's not even a month old, or just about a month old, maybe. Or no, I think it started in November. Anyways, Mike can let me know in the chat room there. I particularly wanted to point out the third post called "There Are Lobsters in the Woods," which is of course, about LobsterCon. LobsterCon is a small QRP ham radio event and a gathering of a bunch of friends who go camping every summer, and he's put a little YouTube clip on there of the something called the Tuna Tin 2 Mojo ceremony. The Tuna Tin 2 is a small low power transmitter, a little ceremony that went with it, a little build-a-thon there. And he says that it was shot and narrated by me. Most of it's actually shot by Rex, who's the developer of the TT2. And he says he's looking forward to the next podcast, and true to his word, he's here in the chat room. So meanwhile, he says stay warm and be well, 73-day Mike. So thanks a lot, Mike, for that. I encourage all you listeners to go check out the blog. That's at n2htt.net. So November 2 Hotel Tango Tango. .net. Check out the blog. I've read all the posts, and it's actually quite interesting, and I think he's onto something there. So the blog version of Linux in the Ham Shack. There you go. Have you guys had a chance to check it out?
Was Mike the individual that was trying HamOS on his laptop and it wasn't working right, like the wireless wasn't working?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Wait, what the problem is Debian does not ship binary firmware in the kernel. That's why his wireless card wasn't working. He just had to install like one piece of software, which is easy to find if you know how to look for it. But that was his only problem. And Richard, who is the developer of HamOS, may or may not want to take a look at how to get that installed. I know I commend him for using the live build system. And if you're not used to this kind of stuff, that is a hard task, my friend. So I commend you for doing that. But if you want to dig a little bit deeper, you just need to figure out how to add the non-free and the non-contrib repos to HamOS. When you do that, you can then install the binary firmware drivers for all the wireless cards. So that way, if a user like Mike puts in his laptop, the wireless card will work, and he won't think there's something wrong with HamOS. There really wasn't anything wrong with it. He just didn't have the driver installed.
Yeah, I know Mike actually kind of figured that when he'd installed it. He kind of guessed that it was probably something that he hadn't done exactly. And he says in the chat room, yes, I found out I had to install the firmware for the USB Wi-Fi device. There you go. And somebody, Ted, mentions that you should tell the developer about the bugs or the problems. The good thing is that the developer always listens to the podcast, so he's very, very aware of all this. He's just so busy that he doesn't necessarily have the time to answer right away. So I'm sure that Richard will take good note of that, and he's probably very happy of that comment. I wasn't aware of that either, so that's very good information.
When you were talking about installing stuff from the, you know, non-free repos in Debian, it occurred to me that it might be difficult for somebody to do that who's having Wi-Fi problems because they probably don't have a network to do the install with.
And just plug in the cable.
Well, the hardwired network card probably was working.
Some people don't even have anything to plug that into. You know what I mean? A lot of times it's just completely Wi-Fi, and I've been in a situation where that's the only network available that I have. Yeah, I might have an Ethernet port, but I don't have a cable, or, you know, could have been any number of problems, really.
Yeah, that's why I was saying Richard might at some point want to take a look at adding the repos. But like I said, I commend him for using live build. It's definitely not an easy task. And, you know, maybe in the future you could take a look at it to make it a little bit easier for the users. If, you know, that way all the wireless cards will just work out of the box.
Yeah, I know when we asked him how long it took him to develop the HamOS, he said it took him 8 months. Now, I don't know how much his family and, you know, work and all the things he does on a regular basis interfered with that, but that's still a long time to develop a piece of software. Obviously, he put some thought and effort into it. So I think that's about it. We've already covered our feedback. We've gotten through our topics. We talked to Jonathan about his Indiegogo campaign and the Accessible Computing Foundation, so I think we're ready to wrap things up. We've got several donations, monthly subscribers, Scott Pettigrew, Jeremy Hall, Bill Arcand, Bill Hyatt, James Newman, and Gary Utz. Thank you all for your donations, your continued donations. Those are all subscriptions, actually, that we get monthly. Subscriptions are $2 a month and $20 a year. Lots of good value for your dollar here and there, should you decide that you would like to help us out. More on that coming up with Pete here in a minute. On the social media side, we've had likes over on Facebook by Yul. Do you have any idea what nationality that is? Because I don't.
No.
I okay.
Didn't research it.
Well, I'm hoping that was even close to the pronunciation. You know who you are. Robert Bronowski, Robert Keller, Paul Griffith, and Joe Siaccia. Thanks for the liking us over there on Facebook. On Google+, we had Bernard Wolf, Nick Bloom, Tom Sarlandi, and Bennett Cobb add us to their circles or join our community over on Google+. On Twitter, we have new followers, Gerard Thompson, M3XYP, Thomas Sarlandi, at Sarfata, S-A-R-F-A-T-A, and George Moshkow, W0LMN. That's kind of a cool call, and W0LMN. Yeah. So that's pretty cool. Thanks for following us over on Twitter. And we've also had a couple of folks, Clay Lane and Nathan Ivan, join us on the mailing list. And if you are interested, we have a new Badger merchandise, which we don't promote very much on the show, but you should check it out. The first one was a little bit confrontational. I still think they're fun. I wear my shirt, you know, here and there, especially at conferences and stuff. But for those people who are a little more socially minded, perhaps, we have a new design that I created about a month and a half ago and put it up over at Cafe Press, I think. That's at one of the sites, Cafe Press or Printfection. So if you want to help out the show in that way, we have merchandise. We have mugs, tablet covers, clocks, shirts, hoodies, all kinds of stuff like that. And Some of your purchase goes to help out the show, and you get a cool hoodie or mug or clock or something. Anyway, before I talk too much about that, since Pete's going to bring it up again, I guess we'll say thank you, Jonathan, for being with us tonight and talking about your new project. That's very cool, and I hope you're successful raising the money that you're looking for there.
Ah, thank you, guys. I totally appreciate coming on and you giving me the opportunity.
Nope. Yeah, it was fun. Absolutely. You're a great guy.
Absolutely. Great guy and a great project, and we hope we can help you, you know, get a little closer to your goal. And with that, I guess I'm going to start the outro music. Pete's going to start us on the way out of episode number 120. So take it away, Pete.
All right. My name is Pete, Victor Echo 2 X-Ray Papa Lima. I'm in Montreal saying happy end of 2013, happy beginning to 2014. Please check out our website, lhspodcast.info, where you could become an ambassador. Visiting the website, you can check out upcoming events, information, and you can represent Linux in the Ham Shack at a nearby Linux conference or Hamfest if you wish. You can email us, info@lhspodcast.info. You can leave us a voicemail at 1-909-LHS-SHOW. That's 1-909-547-7469. All hate mail is routed to Harrison at hatemail@lhspodcast.info. Yes, that is a real email, and Harrison will be happy to deal with them. You can subscribe to our mailing list, of course. Check out the wimp. Check out the link on the website. It's time for me to go to bed. Cafe Press and Printfection. If you want to buy some of our show merchandise, as Russ was just mentioning, each purchase helps out the show a little bit. You can also help the show by clicking on the sponsored ads in the right-hand column of the homepage. That helps us out. So check that out. www.cafepress.com/LHS podcast or www.printfection.com/LHS podcast. Listen to us live every other Tuesday. In 2 weeks, we'll be back on January 7th, 8 p.m. Central Time, or Wednesday at 0200 Zulu. Recording schedule and our fancy new countdown timer for the next episode is on the website. Check it out. Thanks to all of our listeners live and quasi live, and come on back soon.
All right, and with that, this is Russ, K5TUX. You can find me on all of the social media networks out there, usually under the handle JR Woodman, and I'm also K5TUX over at 73s.org. LHSpodcast.info is the clearinghouse for all the information about the show, including the ambassador program, the current contests, where to find the live streaming info, where to connect with IRC, and how to support the show as a subscriber, or with buying merchandise, or clicking on the sponsored ads, and all of that good stuff. And with that, we will say goodbye, and thank you once again to Jonathan for coming on the show with us tonight. And we will catch you all in 3 weeks' time for episode number 121 of Linux in the Ham Shack. Catch you all then.
Out of what?
Luck, time,
chicken,
and money.